is us like learning in public and like trying to
literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We were at Vancouver Public Library. Yes. There are glass doors. Yes. We are literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Seen. Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Nick and Lala, the hosts of Seen, which is a podcast exploring the intersections of personal healing and collective liberation work. Lala is a therapist whose practice supports individual and collective healing using a blend of traditional and non-traditional approaches. Her work sits at the intersection of counseling and activism, firmly rooted in the radical possibilities of QT BIPOC spiritual and emotional healing. And Nick is equal parts levity and tenaciousness. Intersectional feminist teachings and first generation experiences ground her voice and vision as she holds up the needs, representations, and contributions of Black femmes and girls. In this episode, Nick and Lala are going to discuss detours on the road to sectional awakening and radical self-acceptance, exploring our own connections to our bodies and the gifts that sexual liberation can offer us. I will be dipping out of view, and I'm going to leave it to our wonderful hosts here. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much for that introduction, and we're just so excited. We're so honored to be in that amazing issue of Room, and so excited to be doing our second ever live episode
virtually.
The
party people. Thank you, Jessica. Thank you, Room. Yeah, stoked to be here in my apartment, but also with all of you. This is like intimate with distance. So
2020
to chat, right? Like that's like the
what
theme
it's all about. Yeah,
basically. So I was thinking like as you know, Jess asked us to contribute this episode and chat with you all and talk about Devour. And like we were thinking about, well, I was thinking about like, how do we bring our unique je ne sais quoi to this episode? And both of us were like, okay, well, we don't want to talk about, which I like, and I think I said this, I was like, I'm not a sexpert. Like, I'm not going to be like, let's talk about how to have an orgasm. Cause like, let me know your thoughts. Like if you guys know, if y'all want to tell me stuff, like tell me stuff. Like anyways, but I thought that we could offer, just because we're on sort of the same, we've had some similar experiences when it comes to like thinking about and the journey to like now regarding pleasure, sex, all that stuff. I think,
but it's, like, I think so too, but it's funny you say that because I don't think we haven't really talked about sex that much.
I know.
Even
isn't that weird?
Just in our friendship. It is weird. Yeah. And it's also funny and hilarious when we first, you know, you pitched the idea for the episode and you were like, I'm not that comfortable talking about this. And I wasn't either. We've talked from, you know, before we launched the podcast about having episodes about sex, and we just haven't done it because I guess we're both a little bit uncomfortable with doing it. Talking about it publicly and apparently privately as well. So it's kind of hilarious that we chose to do this for a live episode.
I know. Well, it's like, I mean, why I not? Guess, I know. It's like, why not?
Let's just dive in.
Yeah, let's just dive in. And also, like, I definitely told my partner's family. So my, like, partner's sister will always be like, hey, folks, like, Nick's doing this thing. And I told her specifically, I was like, don't put this in the family group chat, okay? Like, it's okay. You know, I don't really want, like, your mom to be reading this stuff or listening to this stuff or whatever. But yeah, like, I feel as though it's funny that, yeah, we haven't had, like, direct conversations about this, but the conversations of, like, consumption, and I was thinking about it, like, consumption, like having an appetite, desire, pleasure, like those are all the things that I was sort of oriented towards in even just like the front cover of this Devour issue. Like it's a vibrator, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. I was like, that's what it is, right? Like I knew that anyways, but like, you know what I mean? I'm like, and I've been like reading it like at the park to be like controversial. And there's a part of me that feels like a bad bitch, but I'm also kind of like deeply a prude. And so, in so many, thank you, Jessica. Jessica, it's a vibrator. So she's in the comments. So, but yeah, like I think it'd be fascinating for us to like chat about this with other folks, but mostly with each other. Cause we're really just allowing other people to have like access to the conversations that we really should have had a long time ago.
Yeah, it's weird that we haven't. Do you talk about sex much with other friends?
Like, I don't initiate the conversation about, like, you know, like, I think we talk about it sort of in passing, especially if one of my friends is, you know, like, you know, found a new dude and she want to talk about it. I'm like, yo, how was it? Like, I want to know, I ask explicit questions there, but I kind of feel as though, like, I've been in a relationship for 6 years this year. And I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's this like, because you're in a relationship, like no one wants to hear about your sex life unless it's like amazing and you're, it's like interesting. I just feel like people are kind of like, yeah, just whatever. Like, let's talk about other stuff. Cause that's the kind of energy that I like assume people have, but I could be wrong. You want to know?
Is that the energy that you have? Are you projecting?
I don't know. Maybe I am. Like, I don't know. And I think I want to ask, like, why do you think, like this conversation hasn't happened yet? And like, what makes this conversation awkward or like challenging for you? Because I know what makes it challenging for me. I've talked about it a lot, just like being a recovering Christian and upbringing and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I was saying I wasn't that comfortable with it, and I in some ways I'm not. I think especially I sometimes have a weird thing about being a therapist and feeling like I don't know what I want to be out there publicly about myself. But it's funny because I was talking to Mal today and I was like, actually, I'm not really uncomfortable talking about sex. I actually really enjoy talking about it. But I think it kind of depends on, I guess, certain factors. How public it is definitely one. And then also other people's comfort level too. So I guess we've never talked about it, and I don't know if it's like both of us having like Venus and Capricorn, like a little bit like held back vibes where like we both are just giving each other like more, you know, space around it or something.
Do you have the same placement as I do with
Venus? Yeah, you have Venus and Capricorn.
Yeah, yeah, I do. Yeah. I just didn't know that you did, but that would make so much sense. That would make a lot of sense. And I think like I've realized just how little of a vocabulary, like a personal vocabulary and a personal comfort I don't have when it comes to even exploring or thinking about or talking about pleasure or like sex, really. Like it's
even just the way you said pleasure, I felt like you were so uncomfortable saying it.
Really? Goddamn, yeah. Stop, leave me alone, man. No, I actually, it's I'm excited to talk about this, if only because I've realized that so much of my own like discomfort is really because of things like shame and also just the embodiment of like being a Black like woman, being a Black femme and what that looks like and what that feels like. And we're going to get to that, but I want to talk at first about just like, okay, this is, I didn't put this in our notes, but I'm gonna ask you and put you on the spot. Oh. Who was the first person, like famous or like in your, you know, personal life that made you be like, I got feelings in there, you know?
Oh yeah. No, I definitely have a very, it was the music video Again by Lenny Kravitz.
Oh my God. You love Lenny Kravitz. So this, yes. Okay. Okay.
In that music video, I was like, oh, these are a type of feelings that I did not have before. I was like 13, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. How about you?
Oh man. There's so many terrible things that I could say, like so many.
Say them. Say all.
Oh God. Okay. So if I just, okay. Orientations to like pleasure and just realizing like, just like noticing what like being horny is as like in your body, even that is a fascinating journey. I'm pretty sure my first crush was like Tuxedo Mask from Sailor Moon. I was like, I don't know why. Okay. Tuxedo Mask. And then like, this is so cringy. And I was thinking about like, what was the first time that I was like, oh, like I feel feelings. And I realized looking back that they were a lot more related to my queerness than I realized at the time.
Oh, interesting.
But have you ever watched Bringing Down the House with Queen Latifah and Steve something?
Yeah, long time ago.
Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like from like 2002, maybe.
With Steve Martin?
Yes, really. Steve Martin. Yes, yes. And it wasn't Steve Martin. It was Queen Latifah. Yeah, ooh, like, and yeah, I didn't even know like in the moment I was just like, oh, she's teaching him about how to be like sexual or whatever, but I realized like, she's also teaching me. And I watched the clip yesterday and I was like, damn, Queen Latifah is fine. And I was like, it clicks.
She's so majestic.
She's so majestic. And like, just the way, anyways, that was like a huge, like, wow, like arousal is a thing, you know. I didn't even before. And I actually, my next question was, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say, yeah, there's a lot of things that like, I didn't realize at the time looking back. Like, I think the Any Man of Mine music video of Shania Twain, at the time I would not have realized that it was like sexual feelings towards her. But looking back, I'm like, oh yeah, that feeling, that's what that was like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's funny. And like, I remember, so going back in time, thinking about like what makes us like feel those feelings and then like stuff them deep, deep, deep inside and never explore them. Projection maybe, I don't know. But for me anyways, that's what happened. Like I feel because of just the degree to which that I was so like immersed in Christianity and like the church and going to Christian school without any real, like without any sex, like education that's of merit, that's helpful. And certainly without any like even slight orientation to like sex positivity, I just always sort of associated sex and desire and the feelings that can come from those things as like shameful automatically. And like last episode we talked about, or maybe the episode before, my mind is a sieve, but I've talked about before just like all of my you know, adolescenthood really just like grappling with this sense of like, I'm a shameful little nasty. Like that's really how I felt. And at the time I just thought like, if I die, I'm going to hell. And that was like, I grappled with that in like a very, like, that's not a health. It's such an unhealthy way for like youth to get oriented to like sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
how much of it was explicit, like being told sex is wrong and outside of marriage and whatever else, how much was explicit, how much was sort of just implied? Or
98% implied. Like I swear, right. I'm pretty sure, you know, it was really because of like, if anything, though, like the 2% was because my mom, like I remember our one and only sex education talk, and I was probably, I think I was like 10, and I was small enough that she like picked me up and put me on the counter, and she was like, Kiki, which is what my family used to call me, Kiki. She's like, so I'm going to talk to you about sex. And she got like, she legitimately like squirmed as she told, like started this conversation. And I was like, this is going to be bad. Like I just knew that because she was like uncomfortable talking about it. Certainly it's an uncomfortable thing to like think about, talk about, explore, whatever. But she basically said like, you know, sex is like, it was very like physiological, like a penis and a vagina, but the penis holder is like the husband and the vagina holder is the wife. And that's how they make a baby. And then my dad came home from work and she was like, what's for dinner? And it was like, that was it. Like, it was just like a, wow, you know, 2 minute little, you know.
I'm sure you picked like, up a lot of shame through osmosis there, where like,
yeah, how yeah, uncomfortable
she was. Yeah,
absolutely. And then I think as well, just like the relationship that I, you know, between my parents and like witnessing that, it seemed very like loveless, or it didn't seem like it was like rooted in like affection or even like pleasure or like to be in each other's company. So I think from that, I was kind of so curious about it from more of like, I wonder what it's like to feel those feelings. Cause like, I don't even know. And I think what I was looking back at that, I was like, oh, I don't see intimacy. Like, I don't know what intimacy looks like. And so, yeah, like, and I guess for the most part, it was that continued on for like most of high school and blah, blah, blah. But I guess like for you, you weren't raised in a Christian environment necessarily.
No, I wasn't. But I think that, you know, Christianity, my family wasn't very far removed from Christianity. So the adults in my household, so I grew up with my mom and my grandparents. My grandparents are atheists. My mom has her own spirituality, but it isn't something that she ever talked about at all. So, but like my grandparents definitely grew up going to church, I think. But what I know is that, you know, talk about God and like actual religion was not present in my family, but the shame was still there. So it was still a very like shame-based culture. But like we just didn't have like the justification of whatever Bible scripture. Mm-hmm. So and like my grandma was very like, shaming. Like, she definitely, you know, sort of made comments, you know, like the why buy the milk, why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free? Like, that's, these are the kinds of things my grandma, like, literally said
out loud, right?
Yes,
right,
out loud. Yes. Yeah. Or, like, she would always, for many, many, even, like, through my teen years and then through into my 20s, she would always say things like, oh, look what you're almost wearing. Just like,
oh,
like, right. I remember one time said it to me and I, like, looked down and it's like, actually, like, everything's covered. And then she was like, oh, I guess just a habit of saying it. So it was very shaming. So I definitely picked up on that shame. But then through culture, like, my older sister started reading Cosmo magazine. So I started reading that for, like, years before I was ever actually sexually active. And it was kind of the opposite in a way. But it was still very, I felt like that, in retrospect, I feel like that trained me to sort of be like a sex robot. It's like, here's how to perform sexiness. Here's how to give men pleasure, and here's how to, like, perform for a man. And so for the early years, you know, and again, that was years before I even started having sex, so the early years of my active sexuality, that's what I was focused on, is, like, performing.
Right.
Did you ever have, because I know your media use was, like, somewhat restricted, so I'm not sure, like,
it was, you know, it was more like music was an access point to any kind of representations of, like, sex or sexuality or whatever. Music and, like, the sometimes when I was able to have, because, yeah, I wouldn't say my meeting consumption was highly monitored, but I certainly felt like I was, like, not, I just, like, towed the line, and I knew that I shouldn't be consuming certain things. Like, I was not allowed to watch, like, MTV, for example. But I definitely, like, dabbled in the chicken soup for the whatever soul, and, like, any kind of story that was, like, even a little bit related to, like, sex or, like, attraction, I would just, like, automatically be glued to that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think there was a large part of me that was, like, really curious, but also really scared that I had the curiosity about it. Like, I just didn't know what to do with that. And I don't, like, looking back, I wish that I had had somebody who was even, like, in a relationship that was affectionate, and that I could, and, like as an adult, let's say, just being able to see that as, like, you know, that is, like, what a healthy even relationship looks like. And it's so interesting that I say that out loud, because I'm like, my orientation to pleasure when it came to myself was related to shame. But then, like, when I thought about it positively, it was always associated with, like, me and somebody else, or, like, it was, like, two people. Like, it was very, you know what I mean? There was no room for pleasure and, like, joy at the same time when it came to, like, self-pleasure specifically, and, like, just ownership of the body or whatever. So, yeah, like, and I think the nature of, you know, Christian teachings is really that, like, wives, submit yourselves to your husband. Like, it's very much about, like, the woman and the man together. There's, it's not necessarily, and it's, so it's, like, very heterosexist. It's very patriarchal. It's very, like, all the things that we all know. And I was so deeply, like, in that world that, yeah, like, it's not like the Bible was like, and on, like, the seventh day, she had a nut, a sweet nut by herself. Like, that would have been helpful, you know?
I'm honestly really angry about a lot of things. Like, I'm angry about that not being normalized, and especially for girls and women. I think it is more for people who are raised as men, but I'm angry about that. I'm angry about the culture of, like, performance, that, like, sexuality is supposed to be it's talked about as if it's, you know, for men primarily, that it's, like, there's the compulsory heterosexuality that, like, growing up, I didn't see out queer people anywhere. Like, I lived in a small town. There were no out queer people there. And in the media, there weren't. And it's so upsetting, because then I feel like a lot of time was stolen from me, and a lot of very specific issues were then, like, socialized into me that I've had to work really hard, and I'm still nowhere near untangling all of that in myself.
And, like, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about the ways, and I mentioned it at the outset of this conversation, like being in, for me, like as a Black woman, I think as a Black woman and as a Black girl growing up, being in the environment of like respectability politics, kind of, you know, not that people were saying things that your grandma was saying to you, to me, but like, it was really felt that there were certain things you just like couldn't do and couldn't like present yourself like, or representations of yourself that were like actually seen as like bad, negative, like not good for you. And there was a part of me that was like, obviously like intrigued by Black women, like owning their sexuality. But I was so like, I just didn't even know how to approach it that I think. And then by the time I was aware of, I guess, the way that the world was looking at people like me, I was like, oh, you know, there's like, it doesn't matter what I'm wearing. Like, people are going to say things out of their car at me if I'm wearing my school uniform, like going to Christian school, you know, and like the hypersexualization piece, like really began to set in, so that I was like, you know, just aware, kind of like you were talking about, of the like being a sex robot. It wasn't even that. It was just like aware, an awareness that people were going to see me as inherently sexual because like we have socialized the world through white supremacy to view Black femme bodies as like, you know, belonging to the world, and our autonomy or the way that we see ourselves or the way that we own our sexuality is like not like we've always been, you know, fully human beings. But I think a lot of us, and for myself specifically, I've always felt like I have to make sure that I'm not going to be like, this is when I was younger, like that type of Black girl, or like not wanting to be like around the white girl who was like being so like sexy or like whatever, because I was so fearful of what that would like, how people would treat me. And I was like, you know what I mean? Like, absolutely. It just kind of felt like, you know, I was excited to explore, especially by like the end of my teens. Like I felt like a late bloomer, and in me feeling like a late bloomer, I was also like, I judged myself a lot for like having sex for the first time when I was 19. And then simultaneously, I was also really, I guess like self-conscious about the hypersexualization that I had witnessed the world treat Black women in media, for example, like in the media that I was consuming as a late teenager.
You know? Is that something that you still grapple with or notice in yourself, like that fear of that or the way it affects you?
I feel like the gaze of, and I was talking to Danielle about this yesterday. We were having a conversation about going to like Wreck Beach, and I was like, oh, I haven't been to Wreck Beach for a long time. And we were talking about how like, you know, it's awesome to be able to go to like a nude beach, but the reality of it is that like Black women, the way that people are looking at Black women and Black femme bodies is like consuming and like predatory, and it's creepy, and we're not afforded the same level of like innocence. So like me going to Wreck Beach and being nude on the beach, like that in like the sort of like public's mind gives the public permission to like look at me in a way that they wouldn't look at like a white woman doing the same thing, you know? And so it definitely... It's funny because I remember when I first started seeing Nolan, like when we first started dating, we were like casual, like we're hooking up and stuff. And like I was in my big, like I was in like a like hoe phase. I was in a hotation phase. It was awesome. Like I honestly loved my life at that point. And I love my life now. I'm not trying to say I don't. But I'm just saying like the way that I felt about myself then was like, I was like deeply in like the ownership of my sexuality, I felt in many ways. And what that looked like was me wearing like hella crop tops and like booty shorts and like side boob. Like I was like, just like super like bodycon, like showing things off, which is hilarious because that is like the antithesis to the way that I was raised. One and two, I think it was like the pendulum swung the opposite direction, like very much so. And now it's like kind of swung a little bit further back where there are certain things where I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna show some side boob, or like, I'm not gonna wear a bra, but I'm, you know, as like a 28-year-old woman, I'm so aware of like what not wearing a bra looks like for me versus like what not wearing a bra looks like for like, you know, a petite white woman that's like relatively flat chested. Like people don't see us the same way. People don't treat us the same way. Even when I am wearing a bra, you know, like people aren't treating us the same way, point blank. Mm-hmm. And so when you add these other layers of like owning or like this appearance that you're like owning your sexuality or owning your body. Let's just take the sexuality out of it. Like not wearing a bra isn't a sexual thing. It's like I want my titties to be free. Let them swing. Mm-hmm. But it's always like kind of mediated or seen through like like that Jezebel trope for Black women and Black femmes, you know?
For sure. Yeah. And I think that's something that you're getting at that I've felt in my own way. I mean, so as much as I think some of the ways that I learned to be sexual, like through Cosmo, like that kind of lens, were not, you know, the most liberated and the most like, I don't know how I might understand my sexuality now, but I did still have, I mean, you're talking about like your hoe phase. Like I definitely had real like enjoyment and like a real desire to like explore and get out there. And like, I started feeling, you know, really good about my body in some ways. Obviously you still had a lot of insecurities as like a, you know, teenage 20s girl or woman. But what really then got in the way of that is sexual violence. And that's right. Both street harassment and, like experiencing sexual assault from men I was friends with and men that I dated. And that really, as much as I, you know, was able to access information that was like, what you're wearing doesn't matter, you know, it wasn't your fault if you did this or if you did this, I know now like I have so much trepidation about like showing my body. Like there might be a way that I look in the mirror and I feel so good, but I'm not going to leave my house like that because I don't want to like get these comments on the street. And you know, even just like being sexual with another person, it's like there's a heaviness and a complication and a difficulty, and like there's so much that gets in between me and just pleasure and feeling good when it comes to sexuality because of that trauma.
Yeah, no, thank you for talking about that and raising that. Like I totally wanted to add to the like trauma has gotten, it's like the trauma piece that has come from the sexual violence that I've experienced and the street harassment. Like you're totally right, because those two things are interlinked. It's like the rape culture spectrum. Mm-hmm. And for me, what it's felt like is, because like sexuality is such like a somatic like experience in your body, and like it's about feelings, it's the trauma of rape culture and its effect on myself and me as a Black woman has like disrupted the like relationship that I have with myself. Mm-hmm. And instead of me, because you were talking about how like I can put on something in my house, and even if I'm like really feeling it, I know that I can't go outside. And it's like the other, it's outside forces affecting how you feel about your body. And I feel so frustrated by that, because as survivors, I think we work so hard on our healing to like feel comfortable again in our own skin and feel comfortable again in our own bodies. And even like that, the shame of experiencing that type of trauma that's so closely linked to like, you know, your body, and it's like this breaking down of like your autonomy and removal of like your choice. I think it can, for me, it's just made it so much more of like a debate internally when I'm leaving my house and like dressing myself, especially in the summer. Cause I'm like, do I want to like go outside and like brave it? Like, do I want to like accept the fact that not only will, if I don't wear, okay, like let's say if I don't wear like the shorts that I am wearing right now, which are like kind of like not booty shorts, but like mama's gotten some thickness with the quarantine. But if I chose to wear these outside of like my building, I would feel unsafe, especially, and shittily enough, like especially if I wasn't with my partner, because when I'm with my partner, at least I'm afforded, like people aren't approaching me or leering at me in a type of way because they see me as like connected to this like white man. Mm-hmm. You know? And so, yeah, like it frustrates me to no end, because I'm like, I have so many cute little crop tops and like cute shorts that I would love to wear when it's motherfucking 28 degrees outside. But I have to do all of this extra work and labor to like silence out the staring and like the way that people will talk to me or interact with me or, you know, look at me And it's like this exhausting thing that I think a lot of us who, and shout out to the folks who were like, fuck it, I do it anyways. Like, but I just want to acknowledge like how much work that is, you know?
Absolutely. I remember Alok Vaidman on saying, and for them, you know, they're a trans femme, so all of this is like exponentially greater. But I remember them having a post one time saying, often as femmes, when we feel the best and like, we wear the things that make us feel the best, we experience the most violence and harassment. And I have felt that way so strongly that like so many dresses that like make me feel just so good and like bring out the like sensuality of my own body, that is when I get the most harassment and violence. And like, what does that do to you? I mean, how can you really connect with feeling good and feeling free when that's where you're getting the most violence?
Man, as you're talking about that, that reminds me of the dress that I wore for my birthday when I was, the birthday that I was assaulted. Like I threw it out. Like I had it for like 3 extra years after my assault and was just kind of like, I want to reclaim this dress. Like I really want to wear this, but it was just like so linked with the, like a very violent memory that it's, you're totally right. Like what does that mean for us to like, when we feel our best, we're treated the worst. And
that exact same thing, honestly, like I was sexually assaulted wearing a specific dress that I had felt like looked so good on me and I loved, and like the color, you know, like I kept it for years trying to wear. I remember one time trying to be like, okay, I'm just going to wear it out and it's going to be fine. And then got catcalled and I ended up like throwing it out. And honestly, I struggle to even wear that color now.
That's exactly it. And it's like how much, like I feel what you just said, like when you were mentioning wanting to feel that freedom. It's like, I struggle so much with like, how do I navigate the just plowing ahead and like, you know, wearing whatever, and also trying to negotiate my safety and my sense of like protecting myself when I'm in public. Cause we live in a world that's like going to blame women anyways, right? Like if I was wearing shorts that I'm wearing, like people are gonna be like, well, like, what were you wearing? And like, that would be the conversation that we're having, as opposed to like, well, why are people treating me in a way that is like not respecting my body, you know, the fact that I deserve the right to just like navigate space without like leers and comments and people accessing, you know, the ways like my body. And it frustrates me to no end. Like, I don't really know when I'm gonna feel less like trepidatious about that. Like every single summer I feel like, no, like I want to wear, like I'm gonna buy this thing. I have these like visions and grand plans of what I want to wear, and every year I'm just like, I'll wear like the baggy Gap tee that I sweat my ass off in, and like the sort of like Nike running shorts that are like a little bit more baggy, because like that, people are gonna be like more worried that I like am like a mask black like man than they are going to be like, let me access like Black femme's body. And I would just prefer the former to the latter, if that makes sense, because I'm like, I just feel safer and more in control. And it's really about the control piece. Like it's really about being able to like decide for yourself. Like I want to be able to like enjoy my body, enjoy myself, enjoy my beauty, enjoy my body. Like those are things that we deserve. And I think like the joys of being in your body sometimes just feels so incongruent with the way that the world actually works. Absolutely. You know?
Yeah. But so what are some of the things that, like, I don't know, where are you in that process? Like, I imagine it's been some time. You're probably not still in that place that you were right at, you know, 19 after that happened to you. So what have been some of the things that have actually supported you to discover a freedom, or to explore in a way that, you know, first Christianity and then trauma and all of these things had prevented you from?
Man, well, like, I think I'm in a place where I have been able to recognize where the shame and like the shitty shit is seeping into the joyful, like being able to, and like, so, you know, it was the hoe phase that taught me that like I can enjoy my body and like I can reclaim. And like the hoe phase came after my sexual assault, which was like, that was even a journey getting to the hoe phase. Right. Cause it was like, okay, I can trust myself. Like I'm in control. Like it was like a lot of just like negotiating with myself, but still wanting to like be that bitch. Cause I really wanted to be that bitch. And I was, and so I think that was a big point of learning for myself, just to be able to trust myself to make decisions about like my sexual partners, about how I wanted to pursue men or how I wanted men to pursue me. Cause like at this point I was like very straight. So I thought, and then it's been also just like being able to like make my own self like come, like being able to like enjoy like just like masturbation without shame. And that is like a thing that like I'm owed to myself, like treating it as a treat instead of treating it as like a, I'm going to go do this thing and I'm going to come back, see it. You know, like the way in which that I carve out time for it and like make room for it, I think is a lot more healthy, like for myself, in terms of I'm not trying to associate it with shame. I'm trying to associate it as like, okay, I brushed my teeth today, I flossed, and like I had a nut, and that was mwah. Like you need to have the nut if you need to have the nut. There's no need for you to like deny yourself the nut, you know. So it's, I think, and that I think has been huge for me, because my first sort of like self-exploration was like so riddled with shame. That's where all my Jesus Forgive Me songs came from. And so being able to like feel a sense of pride and be able to be like, I know what I need, like I know what I like, and I know that I deserve to like experience that sort of has been huge, you know. And I would say, you know, it really helped taking like, you know, gender and sexuality studies. Like, you know, I took lots of like critical studies and sexualities classes when I was doing my degree, and just being in the space and like being able to have some language that people have developed to talk about like pleasure, intimacy, and like the ways in which history and like structures affect like our corporeal, like our actual bodies, and how we're treated as we like live, you know, engage with systems, you know, pulling back the curtain on all of those kinds of things, and maybe interrogating more about how they apply on like a structural level. I think I have found has been the easiest place to access, and like the personal, like you can have the sweet nut. Like to me saying that today is like that's a huge point of growth. Right. But to get to like, yeah, to get to this point, it's taken a lot of work, and the personal stuff has always been harder than like thinking about things in like a structural kind of abstract way, you know? And I wonder like, what was that like for you, or how are you sort of seeing yourself? And like, where does like queerness come in to like the journey that you have been on? And like, cause I know for myself, as we all know, as some of us know, actually, like being a baby queer and feeling like, well, how does that fit? Like I haven't ever had sex with a woman, so can I even like own this identity of like being bi? And there's still like feelings of the performativity piece of like, what does it mean to like claim an identity but not like do a thing that's, you know? So anyways, what do you think?
Yeah, I've had a lot of those feelings, and definitely some of the same things, like having the framework and the language from critical theory, and from people who are doing that work to the liberation work. That's definitely been very helpful. But I think also, I think a big thing for me has been, you know, building that relationship and exploration within myself. Masturbation for me came after becoming sexually active with partners. Like before that, I just like, I definitely had feelings, but I did not, do anything, because I had no idea. I didn't know how my body worked. I just like, wasn't, I don't know. I guess I was that repressed that I would, yes, think about sex, but like never tried anything. And it was like a long time after like too, that like I'd been having sex for years before I really like started learning about my body by myself. And I think being able to do that, I mean, there's still a lot of shame that comes up, and there's still like trauma that, you know, gets in the way. But I think getting more like, so corny to say, like, intimate with, yeah, like what turns me on and what my body can do and all of those things. I think that has really been the biggest thing in starting to feel more powerful in that way. And like, I know myself and like, I don't need the outside validation so much. Or I don't need to be like acting a certain way with a partner because like I have all my sexuality, it's within me. So that's been like really, really huge. And then also music, like Beyoncé's self-titled,
yes.
Like,
yes.
Oh my goodness. So that was a big moment in my sexuality.
In your life.
Just, like in being, oh, well, in my life.
In being so alive, many. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
But like, and not in a, I'm actually, Beyoncé's like the straightest woman alive. She's like so straight that I like can't even be attracted to her, but just like in her owning of her sexuality. In that,
yes,
was really powerful for me, and like other, you know, a lot of like women rappers as well, just being very sexually forward has been like huge for me.
I'm so grateful that you mentioned Beyoncé because I totally agree. She is like the straightest woman alive. Like that's the energy that she gives me.
So straight,
you know, yeah. And like, and yeah, it's like there, but there's something really powerful and like significant about her ownership of her body and her sexuality and her and how she looks to enjoy her body. Like you can see that she is enjoying her body, like she's in it. And so I would say Beyoncé and Janet Jackson were both two people that were like made me feel like Janet Jackson is like undoubtedly like one of the sexiest like women alive. And just I guess one thing about Janet Jackson I think is so important is that like a lot of the attention that she has gotten in like the, you know, past 20 years or from that like infamous Super Bowl show where Justin Timberlake like rips off of her like whatever tit and her tit pops out and then she gets blamed for it. Literally like Justin Timberlake and her were both banned from doing Super Bowl halftime shows. And then he got to go and do a halftime show.
He got forgiven very quickly because he pretty much threw her under the bus too. And like his statements about it. And like, it was very easy for him to just like move on and still be like very, very sexual as well.
Yes.
And just in whatever way he wanted and still be invited everywhere. And she got blacklisted.
Yes. Yes. But I think like, and I, yes, that is all significant. But I think what I was trying to get at was more that she continued to just like be her like sexual performative self. Like that's, she continued to do that. She didn't like, she wasn't like, oh, okay, like let me switch up my image because now I need to go and make people like accept me because they all think that I'm like this type of person. She's like, I'm been that bitch. Like I didn't consent to him doing the titty thing, but like also I'm gonna keep doing my Janet Jackson shit. And I stand that. Like, I think that's incredibly important because so like both Beyonce, who's gotten a ton of criticism for just her being sexual from Black women, from white women, from white men, from everybody and their fucking mama and their dog. She just continues to do whatever the fuck she wants to do. And I think that that is in and of itself a really powerful thing because in a world where we're always taught to sort of like bend and shape ourselves so that people find us palatable, there's like these two very successful, very high profile Black women who are teaching a lot of the world about like teaching a lot of other femmes how they can own their own sexuality and they own their own body and they can, you know, and the music that they create is like overtly sexual and it's overtly about like self-titled with Beyoncé, you know, like them Rocket, okay, like she, like a lot of that was like Beyoncé being like, let me sit this ass, like she said it. She said it. She's like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And you're going to enjoy this.
Iconic.
Yeah. Honey. So good.
So what does sexual liberation mean to you? Or what does it mean to be sexually free? Like, what do you feel like we're striving for? Or like that you're striving for, I should say.
Oh, what a loaded question. I think it's like so a couple of days ago, I was on a panel and Morgan Switzer, who has a podcast with their aunt Kona, called Black Chat. Listen to it. It's Black Chat Vancouver. Morgan was talking about a part of like abolition work is obviously like to abolish the police, but to resist the systems that take us to a place where we have police in our own minds. And she was paraphrasing that from something else. But like, I want to get to a place where I am no longer policing myself in that way, policing myself and like, I have really great moments where I'm like, I'm going to enjoy like my own time with myself. I'm going to enjoy this moment when I'm having sex with my partner. I'm going to enjoy like my body. Those are moments. And I would hope for myself to move those moments into just like, that's my way of being in the world. And to remove that voice that always still tells me like, or like asks me like, are you sure that you should be like, are you sure that that is the way? Like, what does that say about you? Or like, you can't be like any of those mm-hmm. kinds of voices, like quieting those to the point where they're no longer taking up space in my decision-making process. And of course they're always going to, because we live in like a fucking patriarchal rape culture, like fucked up world where like women have to negotiate our safety and think about what we're wearing before we leave our house. And yet we still know that like sexual violence happens regardless of what we wear. So yeah, it's like getting to that place. And I feel like the sexual liberation that I want for all of us is that we like tune into what our bodies need. Like we talked about this so many times, but I mean, speaking as a person who identifies as like being like high, like a sexual person, like for me, that's a need of mine. And so I would hope that we would start to think about that and like think about sex and pleasure and meeting that need for ourselves, like learning what that looks like. Instead of like a continued focus on the outside world meeting that need for us. And I'm sure that like there's always going to be people who need support to be able to like, you know, be able to feel sexual or have sexual interactions and like, you know, like support sex workers. Sex work is work. And as well, I think it's really important for us to like be able to embody pleasure for ourselves, like in and of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think? What does sexual liberation mean for you? And like, where do you think you're on that sort of continuum or trajectory?
Yeah. I mean, so much of what you said, I think I would co-sign like everything. And then, I think for me, a lot of it is about centering pleasure, my pleasure and feeling good and not feeling guilt and shame for that, which I still do have that guilt and shame that comes in. So for me, I think it's learning to be okay with feeling good, learning to really celebrate and own pleasure, which, you know, I think that is also a big part of that shame around that. It's also a big part of how we get primed to experience sexual violence. Because if, you know, we're not taught from day one that sex is about us feeling good, then often we're in these situations that don't, you know, that like we're not comfortable or we're, you know, we're not consenting, right? Like where there might be like a physical, like quote unquote pleasure aspect of a sexual abuse or sexual assault scenario, but it feels wrong to you, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's mm-hmm. something that doesn't feel
right.
Right. Yeah. Good. For lack of a yeah. better word.
Yeah.
When you're not consenting.
Yes.
And when we're so used to like having, you know, this shame or this guilt or this something's wrong just because we've been taught that sex is wrong, that really primes us for violence. And so I think it's like I have to doubly unlearn. Like I have to unlearn all of the shame that's come from violence, but also all the shame that came before that also made me a lot more vulnerable to experience that violence. So that's huge work that like,
yeah,
oh my God, I'm still definitely like in the thick of it. Like,
yes,
I have so much more work to do on that. But also, yeah, just like learning what feels good. Like for me, I think I've felt again, like powerful and free by learning what I'm into and like learning what my body can do. And like the more I get away from like the, you know, heterosexual sort of sexist standard of like sex centering the male orgasm and male pleasure, it's like, wow, it's like there's a whole world out there with so many orgasms and so much joy and pleasure. And getting to learn how to do that for myself feels so empowering and like gives me a level of confidence that just feels extremely liberating. That said, I think there can be a lot of pressure for especially women and non-binary folks, people who are raised as girls and women, to that can be another way to perform. Like, oh, you need to know what you're into, and like you need to be able to have multiple orgasms, and you need to be able to do this, and it's just another standard to meet. So for me, that's been really liberating, but I think that's just because it makes me feel good. And I think there's a lot of people that might feel good when they don't have to have an orgasm, maybe. They could just, you know, not worry about sex so much, or maybe explore with a partner, and maybe they don't know what they're into, and like that's okay too. Like,
right,
I wish that we could all feel like the pressure taken off. And
yes,
it fun and like silly sometimes and like weird, and that would be okay.
Absolutely. I'm really glad that you included that piece about it's really like the playfulness. Like,
yeah,
our bodies are meant to be like, for me, this is my perspective. Like, I feel as though my body is meant to be enjoyed, and for myself, like I'm exactly. meant to enjoy my body. I'm not like put on this earth, I don't believe, to like hate my body and to like not want to, like, I want to be in relationship with my body because I have, this is all that I've got. Right. So yeah. like orienting myself to, like you said, like removing that pressure from even like, yeah, from even like needing to orgasm point blank period, just like being able to like enjoy the journey of whatever it is that is going to make you feel like you're in your body, you know? And I definitely, it's so interesting. We were talking about this like the other day in preparation for this, just kind of the pressure that I feel in, and I mentioned it right now, like feeling like, okay, I identify as bi, and even having like really amazing friends and people who are surrounding me with amazing politics that are sex positive. And I still like see, there's still like a standard that I'm like, okay, so like my friends like are comfortable with like these kinds of like open relationships, or my friends are like poly, and I'm like, I really want that. Like, I love that. I'm like, yes, like more of that. And I'm also kind of like, do I want that? Like, I need to be honest with myself about what I want, because I can still be, like I said, being the police to myself and telling myself like, this is good, but not good enough. And I'm like, well, what is the point of having the standard? Like, is the point of like this whole experience to enjoy it, or to like check a box to be like, okay, so I have unlocked sexual awakening. Like, I hope that I enjoy the fucking ride. Mm-hmm. I hope I have a great time on the ride. Like, for real, you know, like I think the piece about the pressure is huge. And as well, it's like, for me, you know, being able to ask for what you want, being able to know what you want, if that's something that's important to you, being able to like use your voice in that way and say like, this is what turns me on, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. And also accepting that, like, if you're having sex with a partner or other partners, multiple partners, like the body is going to do what the body does, you know, like sex isn't always neat and tidy. And the representations of sex that we see a lot of the times are so sanitized and so like not realistic, in terms of like bodily secretions, sounds, like all of the stuff that just like happens with your body as your body is doing what it do. I think just normalizing those, you know, those realities, like they're not even like high ideals. It's like, this is what is. It's not even, you know,
totally, which is why we have to be able to laugh, and we have to just not take ourselves seriously.
Yes.
And be able to communicate too. Like, I think it's really important to just be able to talk to, I mean, your partners about it, sure, but I also think it really helps if you can talk to friends and therapists and, you know, whoever else in your life, because it can, there's so much stuff, like, as we've talked about, like, it's a minefield out here. Like, there's stuff that we're up against. So I think it's so important that we be able to like speak freely and share, and then again, just being able to laugh and realize that like our bodies are weird, sexuality is weird, like,
weird. That's okay. And like, it's supposed to be weird, because like that's how, you know, like we're also animals, like the other animals are doing it too, like it's it's like, I think that for me, like that's been freeing too. I'm like, all the animals are doing it, so like it can't be that, like it can't be that deep, like trying to enjoy it, I think has been, that's going to be like my summary of the goal is like, enjoy the journey.
Yes.
You know, and try to like make it fun, which actually leads me into the BIPOC of the week. I was thinking about, and I know I mentioned what I wanted to talk about when we chatted before, but then I changed my mind because I was looking at the old IG and came across one of my like favorite Black femme. She's like a consent expert. Her name is Samantha Biddy, and she's dope. She's from Toronto or Scarborough actually. And she like is a sexual health expert, consent expert, and she offers what she calls sexy sexual health education. And I love her work and her as a person. You know, when you like become friends with people through the internet, like you start messaging and then you're like, this is like my internet cousin. I feel like I'm an internet cousin. I don't know if she feels the same way about me, but whatever. I love her work because she keeps, so she does these things called Biddy Bits, and she has like videos on her Instagram. Hopefully one of us can, I can pull up her Instagram and share it in the comments, but, she keeps things really playful and light, like, and she explores explores the topics that we've discussed today, from like a, obviously like a consent first, perspective. And I was watching a video that she made called, Pleasure. It was on pleasure. And, she was discussing how she's like, you know, but before we have conversations about all the cool things about sex education, there's some questions that we want to ask ourselves, like, you know, where do we learn about pleasure and sexual desire? What do we learn? Like, who is pleasure for? And asking ourselves those kinds of questions. And, you know, she shares what she calls like a pleasure truth. And she's like, you know, everybody's an expert of their own body and their own pleasure, but this is one of the pleasure truths that I want to offer you. And it's this, that like so much of the time we're focused on pleasure as something that is like we attain or achieve from other people from the outside world. And as well, pleasure is something that's only like about genitalia. And she was talking about how, you know, our pleasure place, so to speak, also involves our minds, right? Because so much of what we understand pleasure to be is related to the ideas about bodies and who gets to enjoy what and who does what and how it's done and what it looks like and all that shit that we've just talked about. It really affects our minds first. And yeah, like I just found that to be such an important sort of takeaway that we a lot of the times focus on like feeling our bodies, and it's like, yeah, bodies are dope, but also this girl up here, like that is the biggest, that's the physiological reason that we get wet in the first place, is because up here we're like, I like that shit, and then something happens and that's what's going on. So she was, and that I thought was like incredible. So anyways, shout out to Samantha Biddy. Really appreciate her work. Please check her out. She's rad. She's so fun. And she does a lot of really accessible videos and a ton of content as well. So yeah.
I can't wait to learn more about her work, because I've definitely heard of her, but I haven't like watched too many of her videos. So I'm excited to do that.
Yeah. She always has a flamingo in the background, like a flamingo. It's great. I love her.
Amazing.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
So maybe now we can open the chat and see if anybody has any comments or questions they want to jump in with.
Question?
Just wait.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it takes to like.
Actually, yeah, I don't know. I wonder if we even, maybe folks are shy and don't want to ask questions as
that's
well.
All good too. We'll
that is that. Also fine.
Yeah. Whenever I'm like at an event or anything, if I'm going to say anything or even probably type a question, my heart just starts pounding. And
yeah, I know. You get so nervous, much, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I totally agree on that. Even when I'm like, I know this is like, I've articulated it, I have written it down. You're like, whoa, what if I... I'm with you. Oh, great. Okay. So I'm going to read this question out loud.
Okay.
Thank you, Nick and Lala, for talking about taking the pressure off of sex. You're welcome. In Binda Shreya's I'm Afraid of Men, she talks about sexual acceptance or sexual positivity in queer community is often tied to being very sexual. And if you aren't, then you aren't liberated. Ooh, honey. Or you're seen as a prude, or you still have to do queer work, whatever that means. So it's great to hear sex and sexuality also talked about in a way that doesn't focus on being very sexual as the point of liberation. Like the liberation is eliminating the shame around figuring it all out. Yes, that's true. I'm so with you on that. I feel that's kind of what I was mentioning, like still having like the, I don't know, the pleasure police in my own head. And it's like, for who? Like, who does that serve really? And thank you for mentioning that we also are like policing each other in our communities where we're supposed to be uplifting each other and like allowing ourselves to be seen as in our fullness. Like we need to be really careful about how we're conflating, you know, what it means to be queer, to be like, okay, this is the type of sexuality that you need to be engaging with, or this is how sexual you need to be. Because I think that like we're missing the mark when we're kind of creating like a, this is how you do bisexuality or pansexuality or even like, you know, anything like that. Too prescriptive means like harmful, I think.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And I especially feel that pressure that you were talking about like being poly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for a while I was like, oh, I guess I just have to be poly. Like this,
I gotta do it.
Every queer person in Vancouver is poly. So yeah. this is what has to happen. And I mean, things can change, but like, I'm not necessarily there. So yeah, it is really freeing to sort of realize like I don't have to be a particular thing to be queer. I don't have to perform being queer in a certain way. It can like feel almost like you want to, because it's a smaller community, it's like you want to fit in all the more.
You're like, I want to earn my stripes, so to speak. You're like, you know, we're all together. We're, you know, and in reality, it's like, I don't feel like it's a particularly helpful or healthy way for us to go about treating ourselves or other people. Like,
Totally. Nah. There was one question before that too, so it says, what's the last thing you watched or read that made you feel good about your body and sexuality?
Oh, I was going to reach for pleasure activism. It's literally over there at my coffee table because Lala told me that I should buy that and I did. And it's so fucking good. Like Adrienne Marie Brown is dope. Like the book is like so well written. And so it's very accessibly written. And there's like a lot of different like conversations that she's basically having with other folks. And that has been very eye-opening for me. And help me like reflect and ask myself a million and one questions as a Gemini moon does. How about you, Lala?
That was such a good read. I've been having a lot of migraines lately, I haven't really been able to watch or read many things. So nothing's coming to mind, but music, like so many women rappers that talk about sex, like it just makes me feel so good, like so empowered and confident. And like, it's so freeing to be, I don't know, it's like, yeah, just having grown up with such like a oppressive sort of idea of white femininity, white womanhood, like enforced on me, and like, you know, politeness and being respectful in like a different way, so to just have all of these women who just like rap about their pussy or like rap about sex and like what they, you know, what they want, and are just like so
explicitly confident. Direct about it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels so freeing for me.
I'm with you on that. I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention like how much I absolutely love Megan Thee Stallion for that. You know, she's building off of the work of so many amazing other black women rappers, mm-hmm. like Foxy Brown and Lil' Kim. Yes. Like Lil' Kim was like one of the, like, she is just like crush on you for me. I'm just like that whole aesthetic, her embodiment of sex and sexuality and the vulgarity and like being explicitly direct about those things and showing shit off. I'm just like, I'm about it. Love to see mm-hmm. it.
Some really amazing questions from Jane, as always. So Jane said, have you ever felt like it was easier to be desired than to desire? what are the dynamics of desire in queer communities when there's so much power, so many power dynamics and unpacked historical baggages? What does sexual liberation look like when we aren't free in so many other ways?
Ooh, yeah, I feel, thank you for that. Those questions are fucking amazing, as per usual. What can we expect, Jane?
Yes, Jane, so.
Shit. Yeah, I think for me, especially, like, if I was being honest, love my hoe phase. But it was so easy for me because I was like, I'm acting like hot shit. Like, I'm just like, hey, what's up? I'm cute. And it was like, so like, it was more about like ego boosting, I think, than it was about being vulnerable. And I think the piece about desire, a lot of it is like the intimacy and the vulnerability about expressing that you want something or you want someone or you know what I mean? So for me, it was a lot easier to be like, come to mama, look at me, and be able to negotiate boundaries after somebody was already attracted to me than for me to be like, let me pursue you. That being said, I also was like, let me pursue you. So it was kind of a mix up, but for sure, like the former, you know, being desired, I think it felt like it was more about feeling confident and liking attention than it was necessarily about like, what do I want? Because like I would get attention from people that I'm like, I actually don't want it, but I would still be like, that's nice, you know, like that kind of.
Yeah. And I definitely find with men, certainly, I find it a lot easier to be desired. I think again, like that's kind of what I was getting at with the Cosmo stuff, that it's like, that's how, what I felt I was like trained for. And that's what you're told, like, as you know, someone, as like a girl or a woman, you're just told like, men want you, like it's just,
yeah,
you know, especially, yeah. I mean, especially like, it's not that there aren't intersections in that, it's not universally true, but that's definitely
the big message,
yeah. That like, and sort of that like men only want you, like they only are interested in you for sex, so it's like that's all you are to men is a sex object,
right?
So but then in queer communities, I've definitely kind of felt the opposite. And I know I've talked to other queer women, and especially like being bisexual, there is a lot of biphobia in queer communities, and I've definitely felt like not welcome, and sort of not believed as being queer. And then I also just don't have the same, you know, thing to fall back on, you know, like if I'm trying to attract a man, like I have been told by Cosmo magazine, like 72 ways to like be hot to a man. And you know, and like, I see the media, like, you, I know what I'm supposed to be. But in queer communities, I feel so much less confident about my attractiveness. I'm like, will people be attracted to me? I have no idea.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I definitely agree, with that big question mark, like not really knowing. I think I just don't even know how to gauge that. I think because I've lived so much of my life as like identifying as straight and really only having sexual interactions with men, that and also living in a very like cis hetero patriarchal like lens where women are definitely told like these are the ways that you can be sexual and these are the ways that, you know, that men will like you. Like that's, I totally agree with that. And I was gonna say in the queer communities piece, like I've noticed the difference between, and it's like everything else, like there's intersections to this shit, right? Like just because we're in queer communities does not mean there's still not white supremacy. Just because we're in queer communities doesn't mean there's still not like power dynamics and hierarchies, as to Jane's point. So I feel like the like unpacked like historical baggages, like I've been in like Babes on Babes, like that show, like a, it's a, it used to be at Fortune Sound Club. And it'd be like every like long weekend, like the Sunday or the Monday would be like, you know, it was all just like queer femmes, a lot of white femmes, a lot of white queer women. And the way that those white women were like acting towards me was exactly how a lot of them like white men act towards me. They're like, you know what I mean? Like it was, and it was even, the boundaries were crossed even more because I feel like, I think like perhaps people feel more comfortable to cross boundaries. So like accessing your body or slapping your ass or like that type of shit. So that's, and it's, so that to me is, goes to show that like there's still white supremacy and like this sort of understanding of Black women's bodies are accessible no matter if they're in queer spaces or if they're in, you know, straight spaces. So I think we have to always be really aware of that fact, right? That just because we're like at the margins in some way doesn't mean that within that marginalized community, there's still not like fuck shit happening, because there's definitely fuck shit happening. You know?
Oh, totally. And like, there's, yeah, its own, their own standards, and often walking into so many queer spaces, they are so white. And I know like early on after I came out, I definitely got a lot of like messages from like certain demographics of white lesbians that like being as femme presenting as I am is like not acceptable, especially because I'm bisexual. It's sort of like, well, you know, are you really just a straight girl though? Because you look like a straight girl. So like, right. If you're not going to like adhere to certain, just different beauty standards, it's like, well, your hair shouldn't look like that. Or, you know, you should dress a certain way. And it's like, yeah, there's just so much policing that goes on. And there's, yeah, quite a hierarchy. So, yeah, it's like its own thing. Sometimes where you expect to find liberation the most, you get the most let down.
Yeah, you're totally right about that.
And I think there is now like, you know, a lot more like community building in cutie BIPOC communities here in Vancouver, where there are more options, and like people who are so aware of these things are actually like creating amazing spaces where it doesn't have to be like that.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. Don't want to say that spaces where I do feel safe, where people have like intentionally done that work, who like are thinking about these things, those places definitely exist. And I'm so grateful for them, because the amount of safety that I felt, the amount of like, people have been thoughtful and intentional about planning this out. And the people that are going to be in these spaces, like, understand these intersections, like the people in this space are of color, so like they understand these pieces. And I think there's something really like the freedom to be able to dance in a club, or like dancing and like that performance and enjoying music that is sexual or sexy, and feeling sexual or sexy in like public spaces. There's so much like joy and pleasure that we can get from them if they're like built with us in mind, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been so amazing. I'm so glad we finally talked about this. Like,
I know.
It took us long enough.
I know. And like in public as well. So it's kind of jokes.
Learning in public. Always.
Like we've been friends since like 2017 and haven't had this conversation. But
yeah, it's very
strange. That's cool.
But here
that's
we are. Cool. Yeah, the journey, you know? And thank you again to Jessica and Molly and Room Magazine for hosting this. It's been so fun.
Yes, absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you all for your questions. And we'll see y'all on the interwebs, you know.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community, and we cannot do this without you.